So today I want to cover today about probably four or five different mitzvos in the count of mitzvos. I'll tell you the numbers as we go through them. We're kind of jumping around a little bit just to put it all together because it's one unit. The topic would be the mitzvos relevant to marriage and divorce. So those are the mitzvos we're going to deal with. So the first mitzvah which comes up, which is really the one that we're going in order with, is the mitzvah of marriage, of performing kiddushin. As it says in the Torah, that when one decides to get married, there's a process. Meanwhile, I want to talk about, obviously you have to find the spouse, which is the most challenging part of it all, but even once you've found that spouse, there's a process of how to perform marriage. And I want to start off by introducing it with the Rambam, because Rambam contrasts marriage before the Torah, the marriage after the Torah was given. The Rambam says, this is the first chapter of the laws of marriage in the Rambam. The Rambam says, before the Torah was given, a person would meet a woman who he liked, and if they both consented to get married, basically they would just go home, they would be intimate with one another, and that would create marriage. There was no formal ceremony, no ring required, no kiddushin, no witnesses. It was just, you go home, and poof, you're married.
That's also in the Gemara, in the Talmud too,
right? No, in the Talmud they had to perform kiddushin.
They get three ways, no?
Yeah, but this wouldn't be kiddushin even according to the Talmud. This would not, there's no witnesses, there's no nothing. This is just, that you go home and you're married. That's how it works.
This is before right? The Torah was given.
Well, it has to be that they actually had in mind to become married. Yeah, that's the intention, correct. Yeah, it says they both want to be married. And if you have that consent, they're married. And marriage didn't matter before Torah was given because even non-Jews have a concept of marriage, even halachically. One of the mitzvahs of Bnei Noach has to do with immorality, with incest relationships, with marriage, with, you know, there is a concept even amongst non-Jews of marriage as well. So this concept applied before the Torah was given. But when the Torah was given, things changed a little bit. And the Rambam says, once the Torah was given, so Jews are commanded that when they want to get married, they have to perform an act called Kiddushin. Kiddushin is an act, a formal ceremony of acquiring a wife, done before two witnesses, as we do at a wedding, and that creates Kiddushin. Now the truth is, there's two different steps in creating a marriage. One's called Kiddushin, one's called Nisuin. Kiddushin is this first step, which we are familiar with, you know, the giving of the ring. That's called Kiddushin. The second step is called Nisuin, and Nisuin is when all full marital obligations come into play. So let me just clarify that for a second. In the times of the Gemara, they used to actually give a year's wait between Kiddushin and Nisuin. So it would be similar to the idea, let's say, of engagement nowadays. Engagement, in our minds, has no halachic value. It's just a commitment. I mean, it has a commitment in terms of commitment to value, but there's no halachic status change. Kiddushin creates a status change. And once there's Kiddushin, this woman is married to this man. She cannot marry anybody else. If she were to commit an adulterous act, that's considered adultery. Even though they haven't yet lived as husband and wife together, she is now a married woman. In the times of the Gemara, they would give a year in between. They would do Kiddushin. They'd spend 12 months preparing for the actual full wedding ceremony. And then 12 months later, they would do Nisuin. That was the process. Nowadays, we do it all in one shot. You go to a wedding nowadays, under the chuppah, you perform Kiddushin. And then Nisuin is performed also. It's actually a dispute what constitutes Nisuin. It might be the chuppah. It might be the yichud. It might be just going home afterwards, or going into a special room together, like the yichud room. There's a lot of different opinions of what constitutes Nisuin. Bottom line is, for us, on the day of the wedding, it's all accomplished in one shot. There's no 12-month waiting period between the two. That's how we do. That's our custom nowadays.
People change. Our sages must have changed. It changed it somehow.
Well, it's not a matter of halacha. It was a matter of custom. I mean, you need to have both parts.
Yeah, I know.
The question is, how do you wait or do you not wait? I think that they realized that waiting was not a good idea.
Yeah.
Because if you have a commitment that's really a status change, and then something goes wrong, it's a much more serious situation than if there's no commitment yet. So it's much safer to do it all in one shot, I think is really where that came from. So that's how we do it. The act of Kiddushin, how is that performed? So this is the next step in the Rambam. And the Rambam says this act of Kiddushin is performed in one of three ways. This is based on the Mishnah. It can be done with kesef, shtar, or bia. So kesef would mean with money, or something worth money. So the ring is actually something that's worth, has a value. So that's in case of money. So you really could marry a woman by giving her like a $5 bill or something. That would also work, technically, halakhically. You don't need a ring. It's customary for many reasons to give a ring, but really any item of value would work. If she really likes artwork, if she really likes food, if she really likes clothing, that would all work, technically. Or cash. The minhag, the custom, has become to use a ring, and that's not for today's discussion, but the custom is to use a ring. Shtar would mean you can be married by a contract. I don't mean a ksuva. Ksuva is a different idea. The ksuva is just the commitment of money in case of death or divorce, and those are obligations in a marriage. A shtar would mean that there's actually a contract that the contract itself makes a marriage. That's not done nowadays. We don't even know exactly how that contract should be written. It's not so clear to us exactly how to do that contract. And that's not done, but technically a contract would work to create a kiddushin. And the third method is bia, marital intimacy, which also the Gemara discourages, is that that's not, even though it might create a marriage, it's not an appropriate way to begin a marriage. You want to begin it with first step one of kiddushin and then move on to intimacy. So really nowadays we only do kesef, using money for kiddushin, and in particular, we do a ring based on common custom. But again, that you couldn't really do anything of value would work for a kiddushin, technically. So that's the idea of kiddushin. We refer to it usually as kiddushin. The other word used is erison. So there's two different words used. If you ever hear these words, they're the same thing. They're synonyms, erison or kiddushin. So that's the first step in marriage. And then the next step would be this nisuin, which completes the deal, which is basically either going into yichud, going under the chuppah, making shava brachas, some other form, which again is disputed. We basically do them all to make sure we cover our bases, and nisuin is accomplished. So that's the mitzvah of kiddushim. Now I just want to stress that this mitzvah, the concept of marriage predated the Torah, as we said before. Even though from the beginning of time, there's a concept of marriage. This is one of the mitzvahs given to all Jews and non-Jews alike, to be married. The idea of marriage, divorce, being together, being separate. But the concept of kiddushin is a uniquely Jewish concept, meaning that we have a mitzvah to get married in this manner, through these steps, in this process. And we'll discuss maybe a few points why this is. But that's the mitzvah of marriage. The bigger picture, I mean, I'll also pose the question, you know, in the animal world, you rarely find a concept, let's say, I don't want to say marriage, but most animals are not monogamous. Most animals, they'll mate and they'll separate and move on with their lives. You do have a few animals that are known to be monogamous. You know, you have certain birds and the like, which do have one mate and stay with them forever, but that's an oddity in the animal world. The human being, though, is made not just to mate and have children, but to create a bond. And that's the idea of marriage, is creating a special bond to one another, which goes beyond just the practical need to reproduce. So the animal world, they do mate and they reproduce, but that's not marriage. Maybe you could argue the monogamous birds out there is some form of a marriage, I guess. I don't really know how that works exactly. But definitely unique to the human being is this idea that a marriage is not supposed to be just a means to have children, but it's a way to bond with one another and create a bigger entity than just two people. The idea of kiddushin, the word kiddushin itself contains the word kadosh, sanctity, holiness, because the Jewish marriage is supposed to indicate a level of sanctity. There is a marriage is supposed to create a certain bond of that brings down into this world Hashem's presence, brings down the Shekhinah. It's not just two people kind of working together, but there's a higher entity which is being created through a marriage. Also, kiddushin is a step, as we said, kind of before marriage. It's step one, and there's a step two, which is called nisuin, because marriage is not just, again, getting together, mating, having children, and finished. Marriage is supposed to be an entire world being created. It's supposed to be a bond, which kind of, you know, goes beyond these two people. And therefore, there's a preparation needed for it. Kiddushin is a preparatory step, and that moves on to the full marriage, which is nisuin. So different commentaries discuss the value of why the Torah, you know, let's say, promotes marriage versus just having children, if you want to put it that way. Number one, the Rambam says that the idea of having kiddushin and nisuin, having an actual marriage, it shows the importance of family life. Meaning that if people just mated like animals and gave birth to children, I mean, they're obviously this needs to reproduce in this world. You want to create a world of people. People just kind of reproduced and didn't marry, didn't create a family unit, so then there'd be no sense of a family. Who's the parents? Who are the siblings? who are the children. It would just be like amongst animals. Just, you know, the mother might raise certain children, but then everyone moves on. No one knows who's who, and it makes no difference to the animals. For us, it makes a difference. You know, putting aside issues of incest and the like, it makes a difference because a family unit is something which the Torah promotes. Family cares for one another. Family supports one another. Family is there in good times and in bad times. And if you don't know who is my brother, who is my sister, who is my father, who is my child, so then you've lost the whole idea of a family unit. There's no uncles, there's no aunts, there's no cousins, there's no nothing. We all know in our lives how valuable family is. So that's really a result of creating this family unit, which, you know, as is right now, is somewhat under attack in American life, the idea of a traditional family unit, as we know. But that's something which the Torah very much values and promotes, that families should understand their relationships. The world would be negatively impacted if there weren't families in the world, because families are there for each other. Again, including, it's not just parent to child, it's sibling to sibling, it's uncle, aunt, niece, nephew, cousins, everyone's together. We look out for each other. If people didn't have this idea of marriage, you kind of lose the concept of family unit and the relationships which are there. Additionally, the Rambam says that Kiddushin is meant to be somewhat of a public ceremony. We know that a marriage requires at least halachically two witnesses to be there. You have to have two witnesses in a marriage. So that already makes it public to some degree. And traditionally, it's always been this way. We make a big celebration, as we do nowadays, and marriage is a very public act. So the Rambam says one reason for this is because we don't want somebody just bringing home, let's say, a prostitute, pretending, oh, this is my wife, and then tossing her out on the street the next day. I mean, you want to make a real commitment, a real bond of sanctity, because you're trying to not just, like we said, mate like animals, you're trying to create a certain special unit of two people. So having a ceremony which is public is a system in place where we can be sure that marriage is actually somewhat of a bond which goes beyond just two animals mating. It's actually a higher entity. So that's what the Rambam says. That's why the ceremony is so important in halacha. Additionally, the Sefer HaChinuch, a similar point, he says that we're avoiding relationships without commitment. You know, we want there to be a commitment of two people when they're building a home. I mean, nowadays there's a concept people live together for many, many years. And you wonder, they've been living together for 10 years. They even have kids sometimes. They don't want to get married. It's not uncommon these days. And the question sometimes is, well, why don't you just get married to each other? Obviously, you like each other. You're there. You're living in the same house. You're living the same life. The answer, I would assume, usually is the commitment. Marriage requires a commitment to each other. If you're living together, there's no strings attached. You walk out. I mean, emotionally there might be, but there's no status which is there. There's no bond which you have to break. So if you were to, but the idea of having kiddushin, which the Torah requires, it creates a certain devotion to each other. There's that commitment. There's that promise, and therefore, hopefully, that will drive them to want to create a home of shalom bayis, of peace, a home of devotion and love, and not just no, I can walk out anytime I want. The old system, as the Rambam described, this was you could walk out whenever you wanted to. Divorce also meant just leaving. Marriage meant coming together in a home, and divorce meant saying, see you later. And that was the old system. New system requires that marriage is a process, a procedure, and divorce also we'll discuss as a procedure. So neither thing should be taken lightly, and both are there to create a bond or to break a bond. But it's done with thought, you know, with planning, with sanctity, and not just, it's not impulsive. You know, it's something which is part of a process. So all these points really emphasize that marriage is this bond which is supposed to go beyond just two people getting together, we'll call it to mate, or just to be intimate, or without any commitment, without any sanctity involved. This also plays into a different mitzvah. So I was telling you numbers before. So that the mitzvah of marriage is number 552, if you're keeping count. The next mitzvah I want to discuss is actually counted as number 570. This mitzvah says, Lo Sihye Kadesha. Losei Kadesha is actually a dispute what it means, but basically, I'll tell you what the Rambam says. The Rambam says the prohibition not to be a Kadesha. The word Kadesha usually refers to a prostitute in the Torah, and the Rambam says this is a prohibition to cohabit with a woman without a ksuva and kiddushin, meaning two single people who are together intimately. That would be a status, we wouldn't call prostitution, but that'd be under this label of don't be a Kadesha. Because again, the Torah is trying to emphasize the idea of marriage, of commitment, and trying to shy away from any sense of promiscuity, of immorality, and because really these relationships lead to no good. It's people trying to pursue their own pleasure, And it could lead to worse things, you know, worse forms of promiscuity or morality. Even though you say, I'm a consenting adult, she's a consenting adult, you're not married, I'm not married, we're not sisters, we're not brothers. Ultimately, it might lead to worse forms of arias, worse forms of forbidden relationships. So we try to, again, we limit that type of intimacy to a marriage with commitment, with love, with devotion. And that's the Torah is constantly stressing. So you have the mitzvah to be married, and they have the prohibition not to be together intimately if there is no marriage in place. If there's no, there, as the Rambam says, no ksuva and no kiddushin. So that's, those are two mitzvahs. Now I want to discuss another two mitzvahs, which are very much connected to our discussion. This is mitzvah number 581 and 582. Right? Two that go together. The Torah says, and maybe I'll read this one. I got my pocket edition over here. And all these mitzvahs, by the way, are all in the same, they're all in Kiseitse, they're all in the same parsha we've been doing for a while here. They're all together. Let's have to find it. Yeah, so it says, if a man marries a woman, lo yetze batzavai, shouldn't go out to the army, and lo yavor lav l'chol davar, which means that basically he shouldn't leave his wife.
Sana l'sana.
For any reason. Naki, that basically should be clean to his house, committed to his household, shanachas, for 1 year. V'sim machas ishto, and he should give joy to his wife that he took. So Torah gives us both a positive command and prohibition that in the first year of marriage, there's this imperative to stay home, be with each other as much as possible, even if there's a war going on, and you're not allowed to be called into the army. You can't be drafted during that year. And there's a mitzvah that a husband should stay home and bring joy to his wife. It's what we call Shana Rishona, the very first year of marriage. So what is this telling us? It's telling us that we know that marriage is not easy. Marriage is something which takes a lot of work. And the Torah is trying to emphasize the value of marriage, but yet the Torah understands how difficult it can be sometimes. So the Torah says, we want you to really put a lot of focus into creating shalom bayis. You have to take your first year together and don't treat it like a regular year of your life. Understand that you have to really commit to one another, focus on each other, and even if you have important things that are calling at you, stay home. No, don't leave for too long during that year. So the Torah gives this mitzvah not to leave. Again, your person's allowed to go out for to the grocery store, go to work, but not to leave for long periods of time on long trips during the first year of marriage. And like we said, even a soldier during that first year cannot be drafted into the army. So, and furthermore, the Torah says not only are you supposed to stay home, but you should devote yourself to bringing joy to your wife. Simachas ishto. Because what's the idea? The idea, the Sefer Chinuch says, that Hashem wants marriages to succeed. Hashem doesn't want to see a marriage, you get together, you don't put any work into it, and then they fall apart, which unfortunately happens. Hashem wants people to put in the most work they can into a marriage. Sometimes even that, unfortunately, doesn't work. There's no guarantees ever. It's difficult. But Hashem wants us to at least put in our best efforts to make a marriage succeed. So therefore, Hashem says that there's a mitzvah, the Torah commands us, that very first year of marriage, you should stick together and try to really become accustomed to one another, become comfortable with each other, get to know each other well, get to really be attracted and charmed by one another. That should be that very first year. Hashem wants marriages to succeed. Hashem despises infidelity, immorality. So we want to make it work. So therefore, this year is meant to commit to each other truly, you know, emotionally, our hearts and our souls to one another. And the Sefer Chinuch even writes, he says a very interesting thing, that if it succeeds, meaning a marriage which really succeeds, that means that the two spouses see others really as kind of strange. Like a person should say, I only care about my wife or my husband. I'm only attracted to them. And other women out there, other men out there, just don't attract me. They don't mean anything to me. Because since you've become so committed and bonded to each other, anybody else is just, this is not who I'm interested in. That's the goal. So this first year is set aside to develop that comfort level with each other, develop that emotional connection and that focus. And therefore, you'll develop a desire just for your spouse. You'll develop a focus on each other. There is no, hopefully that's good for the marriage, it's good for the kids, it's good for the future. Again, even people who succeed in the first year might have trouble down the road, unfortunately. It's, there's no guarantees in marriage, but you got to put forth your best effort. So the Torah requires that that first year it has a special devotion to each other. You're together, you're there, you don't travel too far. You try to just really put everything into that first year of marriage to make it work and to build the foundations of, God willing, a life together. Now, the next mitzvah, this is number 579, is, unfortunately, we know, the reality of life is some marriages don't work out. Not to the fault of people involved. Sometimes marriages, it's not the right match, and people work very hard, and things happen, and it doesn't work out as planned. So, you know, we're not Catholics, and the Torah recognizes that there's a need for divorce. That's something, all of us, you know, have those stories of people out there whose religions don't allow divorce and suffer because, you know, they're in a bad marriage for decades, and their religion doesn't allow them to get out of it. Hashem understands human nature. Torah understands us and knows that even when people try, sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it's not going to succeed. And we don't want to be in jail, figuratively, with our spouses the rest of our life because we're not happy. People are in abusive relationships out there and just they don't get out of it because their religion doesn't allow them to get out of it. So Torah says there's something called divorce. The Torah describes how to perform a divorce. Because marriages don't always work out as we hope. So it's a reality of life. So obviously the rabbis tell us that one should try their best to make a marriage work out. A divorce is tragic. The Gemara says that when a couple divorces, the mizbeach, the altar itself, sheds tears over a divorce. And that image is actually a very, very powerful image because a home is supposed to be a place where God dwells. When a home is broken, then you're removing God dwelling from that home. So the mizbeach, the altar of the Beis Hamikdash, was a place that brought Hashem's presence into our world. And the mizbeach cries because the mizbeach says, I'm here to bring God's presence into the world. And when couples have to break up, unfortunately, God's presence is further removed from the world. So the mizbeach cries. We know that the famous idea, the Hebrew word for man is ish, for a woman is isha. The only difference in letters is the yud and the hey, which is God's name. Because when a man and a woman come together, God's name comes down and rests upon them. When they break apart, so then, you know, God's also, as it were, removed. You don't have that bond anymore. So that's the challenge of marriage. But unfortunately, sometimes we know the reality of life is that there has to be divorce. So divorce is done in a very specific manner halachically. Now, we know there's an idea of a get. You have to have, it's done through a special document. That document has to be written in a very, very unique way. It has to be written in the right, on the right paper, with the right kind of ink, with the right wording, exactly. Everything spelled 100% right. Locations are defined precisely. It gets a very, very complex document. Now, I also tell you, historically here in Silver Spring, to my knowledge, for many, many years, they wouldn't write a get in Silver Spring. Getting were only written in Washington. And I remember the day that Rabbi Einemer Zatzal was actually excited to write, I mean, I'd say excited, but he's excited he can now write getting in Silver Spring. Now, why was that? Because since the spelling has to be so precise, we don't start writing gets in new cities until we confirm the spelling with, you know, many, many others, and we get the spelling and the location precisely defined. So there was a tradition of how to write a get in Washington. Washington's an older community. It was around before Silver Spring. So traditionally, getting were written in Washington. Washington, try to spell that in Hebrew. It's not so easy. How you write it is, you know, not so simple, but there was a tradition how to do it. Silver Spring had no tradition. It was a newer community. So they stuck to writing Gittin only in Washington. But I remember Rabbi Inmer one day said, we can now write Gittin in Silver Spring. He spoke to different rabbanim around the world and spoke to different bezdins about how to identify Silver Spring on a get. And then they started writing Gittin also in Silver Spring too. But my point I'm making is that it's so precise, it's so complex. A get's a very, very difficult procedure. I don't mean emotionally, I just mean this technically. It's a technical procedure that requires a lot going into it. So why does the Torah require divorce to be so difficult? I mean, why can't we make it easy? In the old days, they would just walk out on each other, like the Rambam said, and that was it. But the Torah requires this very specific get to be written. So why in this manner? So the Sefer HaChinuch says one thing. He says, you want to have a true proof that they actually are divorced. I mean, imagine there's a woman who wants to be adulterous. And she'll tell the guy, yeah, I'm divorced, don't worry about it. So, really? Prove it to me. So if she could pull out any old piece of paper also, that doesn't show much. Pulls out a get, written in the precise halachic manner, that's a proof. And that's a real proof that we really know she's a single woman at this point. Also, the Sefer Chinuch says that the slower process, that will be a deterrent from divorce. Sometimes people are impulsive. Sometimes people will get angry and they'll say, that's it, I'm done, I'm finished. And really, had they spent a little more time thinking, taken another few weeks, another month or two to sort through things, they'd say, no, we can make it work. No, we should continue being married and we should move on. But if divorce was easy, then that wouldn't happen. People would just left and right just walk out on each other. And you even see that nowadays, despite the fact that divorce, even American law, divorce is not simple. You have to still go through a process, but people still know it's a common thing, unfortunately. But the Torah wants to kind of at least slow down the process to give people time to think and focus on, is this the right decision to make? I'm making a very big decision here. It's a very radical decision. Is it right? Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But that process is in place, that it should at least stall so people can maybe change their mind before the process is over. This is not done anymore nowadays, but even when the Gemara talks about, the Mishnah talks about, that used to be for Kohanim, the process was even more complicated. That's because if a Kohen gets divorced, he can't marry a divorcee. So let's say he changes his mind a day later. He can't get remarried because his wife's now a divorcee. If a non-Kohen gets divorced, he can remarry his wife. The limitations we'll talk about in a minute, but in general, a non-Kohen gets divorced and he changes his mind a week later. If they make up, they can get remarried. If a Kohen gives a get, that's it. It's finished because she's now a grusha. She's a divorcee and they can't get remarried anymore. So the Mishnah talks about methods that they would use to stall even further the divorce of a Kohen, because you have to realize this is final. A divorce of a non-Kohen is not necessarily final. A divorce of a Kohen is final. So the Mishnah actually has a procedure. They would fold the get in a very specific way. They'd have these interesting folds in the get. And the reason they would fold it was just to stall the process. It was just to stall. But that's how serious the decision is, and that's how the Torah and the sages wanted to do whatever they could to stall, just to be sure this is the right choice to make. So again, the Torah recognizes the need for divorce. The Torah gives procedure how to do it. The Torah certainly hopes people can not come to that, but sometimes reality of life is you have to come to that, and there's a procedure how to do it. Going beyond that, so now if people do get divorced, so you mentioned that the idea of getting remarried. So that's also limited. The Torah says that after divorce, let me just read this part.
Which parsha is it?
This is all. It's all in Kisetze. Everything's in Kisetze. Kisetze is loaded with many, many mitzvos. Okay. So the Torah says that people do get divorced, and then the woman gets remarried and gets divorced or widowed a second time, the first husband cannot remarry her. Meaning that, so she was married to husband X, they got divorced. She married husband Y, he divorced her, died, she can't go back to husband X. That's forbidden.
Even if he's not a Kohen,
correct. So the Kohen couldn't remarry her even if she didn't get remarried at all.
Right.
But a non-Kohen, if she gets remarried and then leaves her second husband, she can't go back to her first husband.
Why is that?
So I'm going to talk about why that is. But that's the Torah says. It says a very clear verse in the Torah. It says, Lo yuchal bala harishon, the first husband who sent her away with the get, cannot take her back as a wife. So that's explicit in the Torah. So why would that be? So one reason given, again, we don't know the reasons for every single mitzvah, but one reason given is that there was a very immoral process which was used over history, which people would switch wives, just switch spouses, just for a good time. They would switch spouses and they go back to each other. So the Torah doesn't want to promote any of this type of immorality, promiscuity. So Torah says you can't, if you want to switch spouses, then that's up to you, but you can't go back to your first spouse afterwards. Because we don't want this procedure to happen. Marriage has to be sacred, has to be holy, has to be a commitment, and we don't just play around with each other's spouses. So therefore, the Torah says if you get divorced, that we understand that, that's the reality of life. If you change your mind and want to get remarried, that's also okay. But we want to make a deterrent for this practice of switching spouses, and therefore we're going to not allow you to be remarried if you got married in between. So that's how it's explained. But all these mitzvahs show us one major point, which is the way the Torah looks at the bond of marriage as being something that's well beyond just two people getting together, than animals mating, than a tool to reproduce children. There's a sanctity which is there, which has to be maintained. We're trying to keep a sense of morality, a sense of commitment, a sense of shalom bayis. And if any of these things are not in place, so you might lose that sense. So there's a mitzvah to make kiddushin, that you want to do the procedure to make a proper marriage. There's a mitzvah not to be intimate if you're out of wedlock. There is a mitzvah to take that first year of marriage and do whatever you can to make it work out so that the marriage is successful. There is the procedure of divorce, which is deterring divorce when possible. Ultimately, it recognizes divorce as a reality of life. And then there is this prohibition not to take back the divorced wife if she got remarried in between. I think they all kind of point at one idea. So those are all these mitzvahs to do with marriage. Now there's another set of mitzvahs relevant to marriage, which maybe I'll start now, we'll do some more next week, which is there's people that are prohibited to marry. And when it comes to being prohibited to marry, so one category would be what we call arayas, incestual relationships, which that I don't need to talk about so much. That we understand more or less the issues at hand, whether it be in terms of genealogy, whether it be in terms of emotionally, that's obviously an inappropriate activity to be involved in. So the Torah prohibits incest in many, many forms, siblings, parents, uncles, in-laws, things like that. You have those prohibitions. And those are all in the mix of arayas, of actual incestual relationships. We understand the idea of an ashes ish, adultery, that a husband and wife are committed and no one should be trading off with each other. We understand that. But there's another group of people which we can't marry. And these are hard for us to understand at times. And I'll list them now. I think we'll get more into it next week. But that idea of a mamzer. A mamzer is defined as a child which is produced from an illicit relationship. Namely, a relationship which would fall under the category of arayas, a relationship which is the most severe incestual or immoral relationship, such as, again, a child produced by incest, or a child produced by an adulterous relationship. That would make a mamzer. A mamzer is probably the most difficult stigma for a person to have, God forbid. It's something which stays with you forever, and your children and grandchildren, and goes on forever when that stigma is there. And it severely limits the ability to be married. So I want to discuss more about a mamzer. There's also four other categories of people which are limited to marry. Again, obviously, we're not talking about intermarriage. We can't marry non-Jews. I'm talking about even Jews. So if you have a convert from the nation of Ammon, a convert from the nation of Moab, an Egyptian convert, or an Edomi convert, four different nations, there's limitations on marrying these converts. And each one's discussed in the Torah, and reasons are given why. But they're limited. But the unique thing about them is that they're Jews. They can convert to Judaism. They're full-fledged Jews, but they're severely limited in who they can marry. And it's a very difficult thing. I mean, obviously, if they're converting, they'll know in advance this is who you are.
What were the four again, please?
Ammon, Moab, Mitzri, an Egyptian, and Edomi. Edom. Those are the four. So people who are converting will know in advance that this is going to be your status, and if you make this decision, you will be limited in your marriage partners. But still, we have to figure out why are we limiting marriage to these people? They're upstanding, great Jews, great for the community, help each other out. They're wonderful people. So why would the Torah limit marrying these people? And the mamzer is the most difficult because the mamzer is somebody, it's not even his or her fault. The mamzer's parents did something which was foolish, and now they're stuck with this stigma for eternity. And it's one of the hardest things for us to understand. That how could a person have to live with that when it wasn't even their fault is what they did. So I want to discuss more about that. But a lot of these points will also point to the idea of the sanctity of a marriage and what a marriage is supposed to create in terms of that bond, in terms of the children, and where it's all headed. So maybe we'll hold off on those for next week, God willing.
And then, what about Agunot.
Yeah. So Agunot's a tragedy. I mean, somebody who's supposed to have a get and doesn't get one, or someone whose husband has disappeared and doesn't know where he is. She's stuck in that marriage, and that's tragic. And
but either sometimes you solve their problems.
Right. So, I mean, there's an imperative in halacha to do whatever you can to be able to release an aguna. Whether it be make some sort of halachic, loophole that will allow her to say she's not really married, whether it be force that husband who's not giving the get to give the get, Definitely we do whatever we can to free Naguna, but sometimes there's nothing to do. You know?
During the war, it was very difficult.
Yes.
People didn't know what
People didn't know what happened to their spouses. Yeah, right, right. But we'll talk about more next week also, that there's an imperative amongst great poskim, against the greatest of scholars, that you do whatever you can to undo mamzerus. I mean, if someone's a mamzer, if you can figure out some loophole to say it's not a mamzer, you do whatever you can to make the person not a mamzer. And also for Naguna, you do whatever you can to release Naguna. So sometimes you might have to come on to some very, very intricate halachic, you know, rationale to release the person. But there are stories of very great sages that they would go at lengths to allow Agunot to remarry. You know, people who are on their deathbeds, understanding I have a way to allow her to get remarried, and if I don't write this out right now and I'm going to die, it's not going to happen. And they'll put in their ounce of effort in their lifetimes to permit Agunot to get remarried. People who are going into surgery and say that I may not survive the surgery, but I have in my head a rationale to allow this Agunot to get remarried. I have to write it all right now before I go into surgery. There's many modern day stories like this, because that's how much we do to try to save an Agunot from being stuck for her lifetime. So that's also, I guess, an important part of the divorce discussion, is those women who need to be divorced and aren't, how do we deal with them? And the answer is we do whatever we can. Within the realm of halacha, we do whatever we can to make it happen. Okay? Have a great week.